You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network.
A public service message from OneOfUs.net. In these trying times, our country is a nation divided. But there is one thing that still brings all of us together. Craft beer. And there's one brewery to do it. The amazing Oscar Blues. Be a patriot and check out all of their delicious flavors like Dale's Pale Ale, Mama's Little Yellow Pills, and Old Chub. And visit their kick-ass breweries in the great American states of Colorado, North Carolina, and Texas. Drink beer. It's what real Americans do. My name is Rob Summers of Deliberations of Doom, and I approve this freaking message.
Hey, it is Fantastic Fest Day 6.
That feels right.
Yeah. We're talking about Day 6. Oh, my God. Wow. This has been a long but very fruitful fest. And I feel like everything was capped off with our... Well, you know what? I'll tell you in a second. First, I'm Chris Cox from OneOfUs.net.
I'm Nick Tice from Unapologetic Geek Coat, and that's my entertainment.
I'm Les Weiler from TV Dudes, and that's my entertainment.
So, by the way, is that thatsmyentertainment.com?
That's my e.com.
Okay, that's my e?
That's my e.com. Not your e. I had some of that last night, and I'm still not recovered.
So you're saying you had some e in the form of the d, which is tenacious d.
Yes. Yes.
With the KG, the JB, all of it.
The Jables. Now I'm always going to call them Jables. Okay, so I think we're all shameless Tenacious D fans here.
Yes.
I get the chills from hearing songs of theirs. It's a novelty band, and yet... they are the greatest band in the world.
They are.
No matter what they say. That, of course, is Kyle Gass and Jack Black, who for years, well before Black kind of turned into a bona fide movie star, had this sort of underground project with the two of them being musicians who were desperately trying to make it and were generally rebuffed at every turn. They had an HBO show, eventually a movie. They've had multiple albums. And now they've brought to Fantastic Fest their collection of shorts, which is going to be up on YouTube shortly, called Tenacious D in Post-Apocalypto, which is I hesitate to say animated. It's a collection of, drawings by Jack Black that they've done the voiceover for. But even so, you don't really require the animation. It moves very fast regardless.
Yeah. Right.
I would say the one issue I had with it when it started up is that I thought it was animated.
Yeah.
And it just simply isn't. That ended up not bothering me as much as I thought it would at the start. At the very beginning, I was like, okay, it's going to move into the real animation. No, this is the animation style.
Well, it said, this took us 2 years. And I was like, really? What?
It's not the drawing.
Obviously, there must be the writing of it, because it was definitely not the drawings, because I think Jack Black did them all himself.
Yes.
Well, and he even was like, they're like, oh, so how did this get started? And then he goes, what did you know have to be in there? And he basically lists every single thing that happens in the movie.
Yeah. We had to run into the robot, and then we knew we had to run into the thing.
Right. Yeah. They were, of course, wonderful and funny talking about this film, which is the end of the world happens. They survive by climbing into a 50s Frigidaire. obvious nod to a very bad decision of doing that in another film.
Mm-hmm.
And they're wandering around the wasteland hitting various apocalypse movie tropes,
yes,
as it were, several of which are really funny. The champion of all of it is that they eventually get their own Terminator,
where
Jack doing an impression of Arnold Schwarzenegger the whole time, which is just fall down laughing funny. And to our benefit, he did it at the Q&A afterwards,
yes,
which just almost killed me.
Yeah.
And this, of course, features all new songs as well, which will be released as soon as all six of these episodes come out on YouTube, will be released as an album.
Yeah,
as well.
It sounds like they're going to dole out each song per YouTube episode, and that it is a rock opera. They were not joking.
Yeah.
At the start, the announcer said all other rock operas have been wiped from the earth now, and there is only the triumvirate of The Who and Pink Floyd and The D.
Yeah.
And it is a great rock opera.
I gotta say, their songs were really catchy. I think the opening one actually might be my favorite.
The theme song.
Yeah, the theme song. That actually might be that one I feel like I'm gonna jam to that in my car a lot. But yeah, it goes crazy places. I love how they, at the very opening, so when did you know you're gonna make this movie? When did you decide to do this? And it was the escalator. Once the escalator happened, we were we gotta do something.
And keep in mind, this is not for kids. This is...
Oh, no.
It's not even rated R. This is, like, has hardcore animated sex in it.
Yes.
Lots of penises.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like...
Surprise blowjobs.
Yeah.
Like a Jonah Hill book cover from Superbad level of penises.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Good comparison there.
It is like, a compulsive amount of penises.
That being said, I know a lot of people find Tenacious D a little puerile, and they are, but this is kind of like making fun of that own puerileness of saying the biggest problem, because in the end it gets kind of political, and it's like the biggest problem is that we have a leader that's obsessed with his own penis.
Yeah.
And maybe if we stop worrying about our penises more, we would have less of a problem in this world.
Well, I also like it because they even have like flubbed lines in it where they don't quite read the line read right, and it makes it feel like an improv, like that episode of Rick and Morty, intergalactic television. And it's makes it feel much more like you're in the recording studio with them, feeling them working this out. And it's just a kind of a cool experience to kind of like feel almost behind the scenes on it a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree. Now, the biggest bonus, not only do we get this new Tenacious D thing, hear the new Tenacious D songs, get to see a Q&A for them, which went on for a good little while with those guys just, I mean, you know, the least straight Q&A of the whole fest. No one is up there asking them serious questions. Yeah. They're asking them questions, prompting them to be funny, and they delivered every single time with not just like funny answers, but actually seeing Jack belt out in his distinctive style, the song from Heavy Metal,
yes.
the Sammy Hagar song from Heavy Metal. And everyone there was like, please go record a cover of this
song,
right now. But then after that, they played a gig at the Highball and did... Four or five songs,
mm-hmm.
starting off with tribute, and it was just, I'm looking down this row of people where I recognize all these people. There's celebrities, like Richard Linklater is there, Benson is there, and every person in that audience has the same expression of their face of just unfettered, wide open mouth joy, singing along, pumping their fists, and this is... This is the thing about D fans. It almost kind of feels like a collective.
Yeah, I feel like a little kid when they hit the stage. I did the math on it, and I cannot believe this joke is 20 years old, and it's still this charming. It's not just funny to me. Like, I want to hug them both. It's just charming and precious and amazing. And, yeah, the whole crowd belting out the lines to tribute. I think they did Pick of Destiny. They did Rise of the Phoenix. Of course, they did Fuck It Gently.
Yeah, of course.
They're interesting creators in the fact that they feel like your friend for whatever reason. It feels like you almost know them personally because, like, how they are in public and in person is exactly how they are. Like, this movie is very much representative of them.
It did feel weird watching them walk by me and they didn't go, oh, hey, Chris, how are you? I've never met them.
Right.
But they are the celebrities you feel like you know.
Yeah.
So the next thing we're going to talk about is a straight-up movie, which is one that I know Nick was extremely excited
to see. Is this a straight-up movie?
Okay, well, it depends on how you define straight-up movie.
Hey, it's straight-up to the... It's flow-up to the show-up, man.
Right.
Come on.
This is the FP2 Beats of Rage.
Beats of Rage!
Now, if you guys never saw the FP, it premiered at Fantastic Fest, years ago.
Yeah.
And the written and directed and starring Jason Trost, who... it's a post-apocalyptic movie... where the idea is mutants and people in the wasteland compete by playing Dance Dance Revolution or whatever
revelation.
Yeah, or whatever variety of game like that. And our hero is one who has to go through the sort of very Asian movie journey of like trying and then failing and then getting an old master
the best. It's every action movie trope from Rocky to anything else you've seen all in one movie. And it was Jason and his brother Brandon, so Bitro and J-Tro.
Right.
And I mean, that's how involved in this movie the creators are. Like, it is definitely two brothers came up with something when they were like 16, drew it on a book cover, and somehow got the funding to just make it.
And it's insane and fun and low budget, but extended that budget so well. And it's goofy as hell idea, but they commit 100% and it turns into a fun film. Now, much to my surprise, we now have the FP2. In fact, he's saying he wants to make like two more and then in like 10, 20 years, make his Rocky Balboa of the series.
I'm there. I'll pre-buy the ticket now. If Jason hits me up for money before leaving the fest, I'll pay him.
Right. I actually did get a chance to do an interview with him. And it was very, very interesting because he seems still very surprised that the FP hit with people like it was. Like he still seems like kind of shocked. Like, cannot believe this many people are out to see the sequel to my movie.
It weirds me out that the character has an eye patch, and mm-hmm. that's actually real.
He really does have an eye patch.
Yeah. I'm just like, it's very, like, you can't miss him when you see him.
Yeah, like, oh, the day I picked my badge up for the fest, he was standing next to me, and I had that moment of like, oh my god, it's J-Tro. I didn't think, oh my god, that's Jason Trost that
made
J-Tro.
It. It's J-Tro.
Oh my god, you're J-Tro. He's wearing the eye patch.
Well, the gold jacket didn't help.
Oh yeah, and the satin dry jacket, basically, yeah. that he's sporting at the fest this week.
And he ripped it right from Ryan Gosling's.
I understand how this movie wouldn't hit for people, or how you might not be into it, but if you loved anything about it, that same, like, stupid grin joy that I get from, like, watching something as goofy as Tenacious D, there's a we're-all-in-this-together on-boardness about the FP, where, like, when I started FP2, I watched it in the screener room, so I watched it at home, and I watched two-thirds of it standing up in my living room. just in front of the TV, because I was doing something else, and something crazy would happen, and I'd stop and watch 30 minutes of just... It takes, the same way the first one took all those action rules and had so much fun with them, this takes all the sequel rules, even down to Star Wars wipes and Empire references, like all of it.
Well, he's got a re-ninj.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a re-ninj. Yeah.
And this week there was a wedding.
Yes.
Not at Fest, but the folks showed up.
From the wedding.
Yeah. They met over FP somehow, and
Jason was Simon Barrett was here in town for?
I think so.
I know he said he missed the first half because he was at a wedding in town.
And they, mm-hmm. they went. So I assume those people are going to re-ninge their vows at some point in 20 years.
Or when the FP3 comes out. But, I mean, this is more of the same, but if you love it, it's fun, and it definitely, whereas the first one you could say is their Mad Max, this is their Road Warriors, our villain. It looks like he was one of the bad guys from the Road Warrior.
Yeah.
Crazy, decked out, like a Braveheart blue hand face paint.
So awesome.
He looks like Charlie Day, though. I kept thinking, is that Charlie Day?
Mm-hmm.
He looks and sounds like Charlie. He's not.
And it cracks me up that they make a plot point that it's just a dude that looks like me. Like, he looks nothing like Jason Trost.
No. Yeah,
at all.
Yes.
I mean, this is the type of series. Not going to be for everyone, but I think that the FP and the FP2 do that sort of, like, we're making an intentionally bad movie on some level, better than anyone really else does.
Yes.
Well, I think when he was telling me about it, I was asking him about all the extras in the background, because I loved all the crazy stuff. Like, there's just some guy in sombrero in the background for no reason. And he was like, yeah, I gave direction to everybody that I didn't want them to be in a parody. I told them, pretend like you're in Braveheart. But delivering lines like from the worst 90s rap group of just like
the language of the movie, it's this weird Idiocracy, goofy future patois kind of thing. You're either on board or you're not. This reminded me, the first time I saw FP, it reminded me of Six String Samurai, which was another Austin best movie from years and years ago. And it's that same vibe of like, this is unlike anything I've ever seen, and you got a film crew worth of people to make your vision and never make you back off anything. That there's two of these now. It warmed my heart. This is the happiest thing that I've watched as far as making me happy.
It's a fantastic best miracle.
Yes.
Next up, we are going to talk about The Perfection, which has quickly become, it was a late addition to the festival. And it's quickly become a lot of people's number one or top three films of the whole show, directed by Richard Shepard. This stars Allison Williams from Get Out, or Girls, if you will, who plays a former cello prodigy. We see she basically is former because she had to step away when her mother was dying and she had to go take care of her and other issues. But she seeks out her old mentor, played by Steven Weber, who has a new star pupil, Logan Browning. And, like, they kind of... There's obviously... When they first meet, you're like, there's a nefariousness in Allison Williams' eyes. She's like, she has given her that.
I couldn't tell if that was really there, or if I just couldn't shake that from Get Out.
Right.
Because I haven't seen her in a lot of stuff, and so I kind of let it go for a minute of like, maybe I'm just assuming you're bad.
Yeah, you felt evil white girl, but then immediately the movie's like, wow, these two hit it off, and I mean, hit it off.
And I didn't expect that. So you're set up, I didn't know a lot about this movie walking in, and you're set up to feel like it might be like Whiplash.
Mm-hmm.
This is about very high-end musical prodigy, the conservatory level that these girls are training at is hyper-competitive Black Swan level shit. And I really thought that they were going to be head-to-head against each other immediately, and it caught me so off guard when Logan's character stops her immediately and says, I'm a fan of yours. And like, you realize, oh God, they actually kind of love each other or are friend, are worshipful of each other. It turned the movie a different direction for me then, and then the movie ran from there.
Yeah, I really cannot emphasize enough, don't listen to anyone who's going to talk too far into the plot of this movie, but suffice it to say, it takes multiple gigantic twists and turns. It gets gory, it gets hallucinatory, it gets filled with, like, really nasty revenge.
As much as I adore it, I feel bad that I have a couple of people I don't want to recommend it to, because it does get very gory.
Yeah.
But it is maybe one of the most satisfying movies I've seen, movie experiences I've had in a long time. I brought Nick along for safety because he hasn't seen it, in this way I won't spoil it for people. Because I don't want to ruin it for him. It is stunning and not the movie I thought it would be.
It turns out they're werewolves now.
Yes.
I knew it. No, this and Hold the Dark.
It's just a Ginger Snap, Cloverfield kind of tie-in thing.
Every movie in this fest this year has werewolves in it, except for the movie called Werewolf.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Which has a lot of dogs.
It's a lot of dogs, though. Yeah. I see someone comparing it on the Fantastic Fest website to Brian De Palma, and I can totally see that, because it has that very bright, very sort of like, things that feel like the twists in Body Double, where you're like, wow, this is wacky, like the level of these twists, and there are going to be people who are not going to be able to swallow some of the twists in this movie, because we're talking outrageous level twists that happen on multiple times, but it's hard, because at first the movie sells itself as more of a straight, you feel like you're going to be prepared for more of a straight drama type thing. Ready for this movie to go into wild, wacky places.
Yes, yeah, you are absolutely... People say this about movies all the time, don't look up anything about it, I am not joking, you should just try to walk into this site blind. I mean, no, it'll be gory, if you're going to run out for blood, you probably shouldn't sit through this, but as much as possible, I would recommend everybody just go watch this.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. I do feel it's kind of got... And by the end, it was like, this is kind of a Get Out for the Me Too generation, which is then hurt by the fact Allison Williams like in it again. But it is there. They both have a sort of like Twilight Zone, but with ultimately a very strong message about current events, current social themes.
Yeah, there's something about it that ends so satisfyingly that I almost felt like I don't deserve an ending where the characters get what they want this much.
Yeah,
I'm about endings.
There's an ending shot that's just like brings the movie together in a very literal way and a very cool metaphorical way that it gave me the chills. It was so great.
Class act, it ends on the title card again, and I'm in love with this.
I love it when a movie ends on that, when the title pull the title card.
Just that moment of like, remember what you're watching? This. and like, bravo, sir. Well done.
What's the fest movie that was like Pat Healy and it was...
Cheap Thrills.
Cheap Thrills. That was the best ever end of movie title card, because it was this moment where you couldn't be anymore on the edge of your seat and having a great time, and the movie concludes on a wham, and the giant fill the screen, Cheap Thrills, and the whole audience, when I saw it, literally stood up and started screaming and cheering.
I was banned from picking movies for a full week by my wife for picking Cheap Thrills.
Wow.
We watched Green Room, and I went, hey, you know what else we should watch? And I threw on Cheap Thrills right after Green Room, and we got done with it, and she's like,
yeah, my roommates,
I can't believe you picked that. You don't get to pick a movie for a whole week.
Roommates banned me for a month. They did not. They don't like the dark stuff like I do, I guess.
I think that movie's one of the greatest.
It's fantastic. That's like the third time I've seen it.
I wouldn't be surprised if The Perfection turns into kind of a midnight movie type of like cult classic as well. It's really good. And then we're going to talk about one that should have been a midnight movie cult classic in America 30 years ago, but somehow this movie Deadly Games, I'm blanking on the original name, it's like the address of the house. It's 3615.
Code Black Peter.
And it is the movie that Home Alone shamelessly ripped off.
And we're not joking on the timeline here. This movie came out in 88. It showed it at Cannes Film Festival. It did not get distribution for almost 2 years, and by the time it got distribution, it was Christmas of 90, and Kevin McAllister was slapping his face and screaming.
And let's be clear, right after the screening, Spielberg contacted the director, Rene Manzor, and was like, hey, we need to talk. And
so they know they saw this movie.
Yes.
The people that break into the guy that breaks into the house in Deadly Games is not the Wet Bandits. This is not Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern.
No.
There's real stakes here.
Yeah, there are real stakes here. This guy is real dangerous. This kid is a real genius. He's a lot more like Bruce McLeod or something than Kevin.
Yeah. He's like, Kevin has like the sort of smarmy rich kid thing vibe going on. But I never ever felt in those movies like, should I give a shit about this kid? Little rich, annoying rich kid. Here, it feels like there's real stakes. This kid, despite being the son of a woman who owns a rich.
It's a legit castle. He loves any real castle.
Straight up castle, despite like the fact that like he can do whatever he wants. He has all the toys in the world. He's super likable. He walks around dressed in Rambo clothes. There's Rocky montages.
His dog is adorable. The wallet he's sporting is ridiculous and fun.
He loves his grandpa, who's getting very old. He's like a big part of that is their relationship here, which is the one thing I'd say the most different from Home Alone, is that the whole time he's hiding his grandpa and trying to make sure his grandpa's not going to get caught by this guy, who in this case, like you said, not robbers, but is a delusional, presumably homeless guy who we see in the beginning clearly just wants to play with kids. He's not like a sadistic serial killer. He's a legit crazy dude who part of this movie is trying to figure out how far and what type his delusions go.
Yes.
There's a point where it's hard to tell, like, there's a fight there. Like, they're fighting each other, but they're also, like, playing. Like, the train sequence, the train toy sequence is probably the perfect metaphor for the film where, like, they're both at the same mental, like, level or emotionally stunted at, like, for how young they are. Like, it's indistinguishable from play fighting and then actual fighting, and it's very interesting. Also, the music in it is great.
Yes.
The copyright rules must be a lot more lenient in France.
Yes.
Because there's definitely, like, the Eye of the Tiger riff might have one chord difference.
Yeah, other than that, it's Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah, and it's like...
very important to read copyright law outside the States does not work the same.
It reminds me of Vanilla Ice of, like, no, it's dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. And, like...
But the music works perfectly. It gets that montage vibe across. This thing is it's an 80s action movie in the head of a little kid, but the stakes are real. And the thing that makes... this just sounds like a Home Alone ripoff that's a little more violent to a lot of people, I'm sure. The thing that makes Deadly Games special above... this is a Christmas classic that I have to go find on DVD so that I can start showing it to people, is that at no point does that boy lose faith in Santa Claus.
Yeah.
He thinks for this entire movie, Santa came to his house to kill him.
Yeah.
And he never realizes that it's a homeless man in a Santa suit. For the boy, I mean, obviously all the adults know, all the cops know, but for the boy, you can see it in his eyes that every time the camera lands on him, you can see that he believes he's waited up to see Santa and things went this wrong.
And that point where he goes from setting traps that are just to capture or delay him to like, no, screw this guy.
I
have to kill Santa Claus.
There's the gearing up montage. They play it again and a repeat. And this time it's like super dangerous of like the things he creates. And you're like, oh shit, shit is about to get real. There's a great moment, like a great like playing around with the house of like this space of shooting and like where the crazy guy is stalking the kid. And then it's like the kid gets one over on him. The whole audience like put their fists up in the air at certain points in this movie.
Yeah, you want this kid to win.
You do. And unlike Kevin McAllister, this kid is scared.
Yes, the stakes are real. I was genuinely afraid for the grandpa.
Oh, yeah. You kept thinking, this movie does something early on that you go, wow, it'll go there.
This movie is dark enough that it'll do it.
Yeah, and so you are genuinely afraid that the grandpa's going to get killed, you know, which is important.
Mm-hmm.
Very important, because otherwise it's just kind of lighter fluff. Here, you do really feel like, wow, this movie could go anywhere.
There's also, and this, I think, speaks to it being an international film, it is an older movie from 88, so the look of the film, it feels like a Christmas movie I would have watched on VHS. Everything's a little fuzzy, the film's a little, all the shots have a very 80s Christmas movie kind of vibe. And then the actual viciousness of the plot is the kind of thing that I feel like American movies started figuring out in the mainstream 5-10 years ago, maybe.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This has a viciousness that I would, like, if an American movie remade exactly this movie this year, we would call it prescient and revolutionary, and you guys are pushing the envelope. This thing's 88.
Yeah.
And it has an adult seriousness that it takes everything. Even though it is whimsical and fun, and this kid has traps and toys... and he's got, you know, Nerf armband with all the little suction cup darts and all that kind
of... All of which he ends up being able to turn into a way that they are, in fact, dangerous.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I was just thinking those suction cup darts actually were dangerous.
He even uses one of those to create, like, an aliens rip later of, like, mm-hmm. the... Like, oh, I almost thought it was, like, I'm gonna be another Santa Hunter. Like,
But yeah, I think we can all say we all enjoyed that. Sadly, still, I was waiting for them to announce a distribution. It's never been available in English before now. Now it's finally subtitled. And they did do a great job subtitling. Mm-hmm. I'm always worried about that with these mm-hmm. things. But look, last I heard that he still doesn't have anybody to distribute this thing.
And this kills me. Like, I want to go and find where who I have to pay to get a DVD burned to this for me, because I want a copy of this movie. It is a new Christmas classic and I don't have enough of them.
Agreed. Well, that is it for our coverage for day 6. Stay tuned for our very tired coverage of day 7, where there'll probably be a few interviews. We'll get a chance to talk about Bad Day at the El Royale.
Bad times at the El Royale.
Anyway, yeah, all that is coming soon. Stay tuned. We cannot wait to tell you about it.